All right, Jabo, say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Mem Beis. We have a beautiful daf ahead of us today, 42. We are picking up Mem Aleph Amud Beis, 41b, five lines up from the bottom. Our shir this morning is sponsored by Said and Sima Haken in honor of Mr. and Mrs. Martyr, Shekoyach. And again, in Said's words, the uninterrupted presence of Mr. Martyr at Daf Yomi serves as an inspiration to all of us. Yeah, Shekoyach. Thank you, Said. You can pay him afterwards. He accepts credit card. All right. Jose, let's Shekoyach see. Thank you. All right. So let's begin. So we're picking up again, bottom of the mouth from Bay 41B, last five lines. Shlosha lekuchos mitzdafin. So we remember again, we've been focusing, of course, in the topic of chazaka, focusing on the idea that 3 years of uninterrupted use of a particular area establishes what we'll call a presumption of ownership. So we're gonna try to dig down a little bit more into some of these details to kind of get a little bit of a better understanding. But for our purposes today, the Gemara says the following. Up until now, we've assumed that what chazaka means is the same person is occupying the land for the 3 years. Comes along the Gemara now says, Shlosh lekuchos mitzdarfin. So if you have three people, each of them who lived there for a year, in the presence of the previously known owner, their combined residency establishes chazaka. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. The Rashbam is pretty much like in the middle of the page. In the middle of the wide lines. Shlosha lekuchos mitzdarfin. Sada sheyesh edim shahaisa shal Ruven kol hayamim. There's a field, and again, the last known owner was Ruvain. Ve'echzik ba shemen shana, ki toin shakana me'Ruvain. So actually, the Rashbam once again is going to jump ahead. So before we go to the Rashbam, go back up to the Gemara for just one moment. So it says the Gemara, Amar Rav, Rav qualifies this ruling and says, V'kulam b'shtar. Rav says, this is assuming that what? Thank you, Baruch Fischel. This is assuming that all of them, each of the buyers, bought the property with the shtar. So the case over here is the following. The last known owner of the property was a man by the name of Ruvain. Okay, then we see Shimon living on this field for a year. Shimon then sells it to Levi. He sells it to Levi with a shtar. Levi goes ahead and lives on it for a year. Levi then sells it to Yehuda with a shtar, and Yehuda lives on it for a year. So now, there have been three people living on this land for a total of 3 years, in the presence of Ruvain, the last known owner. What the Gemara is suggesting is that the combined 1 year residencies of these individuals that have been established through Shtar combined to go ahead and form a chazaka in the face of Ruvain's last known ownership. So now look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Shlosh lekuchos mitzdarfin, sada sheyesh edim shaisa shel Ruvain kol hayamim. We have a field that was last known to be the possession of Ruvain. Ve'echzik ba Shimon shana, ki toin shekana me'Ruvain. Now Shimon, I will say, the first buyer, does not go ahead and have a shtar. But he claims that he bought it. He claims that he bought it from Ruvain. Ve'achakach machra Shimon lelevi b'shtar. Ve'echzik Levi shana. Ve'achakach machra Levi liYehuda. Ve'kasa l'shtar mechi dekil lekamon. Ve'echzik ba shana. Harishalosh shana. So we'll say, so combined, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda have a combined occupation of this land for 3 years. Va'asa Ruvain, v'kama arer, va'amar kilo machra, the Shimon v'Yehuda, I'm sorry, kilo machra, the Shimon v'Yehuda toin, harech zaknu ben shlashtenu, shalosh shanim, v'lo machisa. So we'll say in this case over here, amazingly enough, what's unfolding is you have three individuals saying, listen, Ruvain, we were living in your presence this entire time, and you never objected to our residency. So the Gemara suggests, and Rav suggests, that in Achinami, this would form a proper and bona fide chazaka. Back to the Gemara. The Memra, the Savarav, Shtar Islekala, Ve'edim Leslekala. Now, Bosa, is this to say that according to Rav, a Shtar has a call, but witnesses do not have a call? In other words, Rav sets up this case in a very specific way. Where what? Where there are shtaros involved. We'll say the only person in this transaction who is lacking a shtar is who? Is Shimon. right? Shimon is the first buyer, right? Reuben is the original owner. Shimon is the first buyer. Because obviously, if Shimon has a shtar, then as they say, ein al ma ledaber, there's nothing more to discuss, because then there's a shtar backing up each level of these transactions. The reason why there's only a shaila in this case is because Shimon, buyer number one, or supposed buyer, doesn't have a shtar. Every subsequent buyer, namely Levi and Yehuda, each have a shtar from Shimon. Reuven's coming along and saying, Shimon, it was never your field to go ahead and sell. Rav is suggesting that since each of these individuals lived on this land for a year, their 3 1-year residencies combined to form a unit of 3 year chazaka. All of this was done in the presence of Reuven, and therefore Reuven has essentially admitted that he is no longer the owner of this land. The Gemara just understands that Rav only sets this case up as dealing with how? As dealing with a shtar. Why? Because Rav's logic is that a shtar has a kol. Since Shimon is selling it to Levi with the shtar, Levi selling it to Yehuda with the shtar, that shtar has a kol, that shtar generates a discussion, and therefore Reuven definitely knew about this, and yet still chose to remain silent. But were these transactions to take place just with witnesses, but no shtar? So it could be that Rav would hold that, again, Reuven could have a taino that he did not know what was going on. To which the Gemara says, but is that true of Hamarav? But Rav said, Hamocher sada be'edim gavim l'chasim shubadim. Yet Rav said, what Rav said, that if you go ahead, if I sell a field to Reuven, and Rav said, the case over here is where I'm selling with Achrayis. So Achrayis means what? That I guarantee Reuven that in the event that this field is seized by one of my creditors in satisfaction of a previously existing debt, that I will make Reuven whole by giving him other land or by giving him money, however I'm going to make him whole. So Rav says the halacha is, let's say I sell the land to Reuven just with the witnesses but with no shtar, and then what happens? My creditors seize the field from Reuven. The halacha is gova menichasim b'shubadim. Reuven has the ability to collect his debt from encumbered properties. Which tells you what Rabbi was saying, that obviously my transaction with him has a kol, has a vice, because the only time you could collect from encumbered properties is when your transaction has a kol. So you see from here that even when one sells just with witnesses and no shtar, that transaction has a kol. To which the Gemara says, no, in that case it's different. Hasam, lekuchos, top of membeis, Rabbi was saying. Hasam, lekuchos, inu afsidu anafshayu. So the difference in that case over here is that Lamaisa, when you purchase property, the onus is upon you, the purchaser, to be vigilant regarding any other debts that the seller may have. Well, this is an interesting idea in real estate transactions. We're going to see this come up again a little bit later on. When you purchase property, so the onus of the title search, right, or in this case, the encumbrance search, is upon the purchaser. So if I'm going to purchase property from Reuven, the obligation is upon me to see what outstanding debts does Reuven have, recognizing that there may be pre-existing liens against this property. Therefore, if Reuven sold me property, even just with Edim and not with the shtar, the burden is upon me to research any pre-existing liens. But did Rav really say this? We'll say tap of Membeis Amad Aleph, second line. Vatna, we learned Hamalvias Chaveiro Bishtar Govam in the Chasim Meshubadim. We learned that if one goes ahead and lends his friend, we'll say, so now this is a case of lending. One lends his friend money. Govam in the Chasim Meshubadim. So we'll say, I lend Reuven $1,000. I have the ability to go ahead and collect from encumbered properties. Which also means if Reuven entered into other transactions after the date of my transaction, and there is a lien against this property because of previous transactions, I have the ability to collect even from encumbered properties. I, the lender. Yet again, through Edim, if I lend him money, I will say, not with the document, but with Edim, then I only have the ability to collect from unencumbered properties. So what do you see from here? You see from here that in order to collect from encumbered properties, you need a shtar. And yet, if you're only using Edim, you can't collect from encumbered properties, which seems to indicate that it's only a shtar that generates a kol and not Edim. Maybe you'll say, Rav Tana hu apali. So maybe you'll say, Rav is a Tana, and as a Tana, he has a right to disagree with this Mishnah. The Yibara says, V'ham Rav Shmu Abiyya, Rav Shlomo both say, Tamar Tarvayu, Milva Alpe, Eina Gove, Lo Mina Yarshim, V'lo Mina Halkuchos. So we'll say, yet Rav is of the opinion that what? That if you lend, we'll say, Milva Alpe, which means a loan that was made verbally and not committed to writing, the lender does not have the right to collect from Yarshim, from heirs, nor does he have the right to collect minal kuchos. Kuchos also means property that was sold after the date of my transaction, which is another way of saying nechasim mishubadim. So Rabbi said, what do you see from here? You see from here that lamaisa, it is only a shtar, it is only a document that generates a real encumbrance, and not edim, to which the Gemara makes a very fascinating distinction. Milva azvini karamis. Are you trying to also remember, the Gemara is bringing up, really, if you think about it, two distinct cases. One is a case of milva, one is a case of loan, and one is a case of a sale. To which the Gemara now suggests those are two dissimilar cases. How so? Milva, I will say, when a person lends money, or borrows money, ki kayozif betzina kayozif. I will say, if I have to borrow money, I'm going to make sure to borrow that money secretly and quietly. Why? Well, it's actually quite interesting. Generally, when a person borrows money, it is in their best interest to what? To keep the loan as quiet and as secret as possible. Because what could happen? If people hear that I'm borrowing money, they could think that what? That I'm in financial distress. And therefore, again, that could cause gan tzaras for many other things in my business life. Therefore, when people go ahead and borrow money, they borrow money secretly. Therefore, I will say, in the absence of a shtar, which generates a call, I can't expect anyone who's doing business with me to go ahead and know about that loan. Because I can't expect anyone to know about that loan, therefore there's going to be a limitation as to what properties are encumbered by that loan. We'll explain this more in just a moment. On the other hand, man dizab in ara, when one sells land, well, this is actually quite interesting, when one sells land, befarhes yazabin. One always wants to sell land publicly. Why? In order that word gets out that I'm selling my land. What do I want word to get out that I'm selling my land? To attract the best price. Because if word gets out that I'm selling my real estate, the more people that know about my sale of real estate, the more opportunity I have to attract potential buyers. So we'll say, let's take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Rashbam says, Yosef inish betzina, people generally try to only borrow money privately. Umevakish shalafar same hadavar. I'm in the Rashbam about 10 lines before it gets wide. So a person has a desire not to publicize the fact that he's borrowing money. Kedei she'im yavo limkar karka lo yavinu ha'olam shudachok lefroa maos velo yichu mimenu biyoker. Hilchach my haviluhu lekucho simavos. You must listen to this. Because when a person borrows money, so they try to do so secretly. So let's play this out. Reuven just borrowed $1,000. Now Reuven's selling land to me. So Reuven owes Shimon $1,000, and Reuven's now selling off property to me. On a technical level, one can make the argument that because Reuven's debt precedes the sale, the land that he's selling to me technically is encumbered by the debt. But at the same time, I have no way of knowing about that pre-existing debt. Why do I have no way of knowing about that pre-existing debt? Because people borrow money quietly. The only way I could possibly know about that debt is how? So, if it was included in the shtar. Say if the debt was committed to writing, because it was like the halacha presupposes that every shtar generates a kol. Every shtar generates noise. So because of that, if a debt was committed to writing, that's when the creditor has the right to go after nechasim mishubadim. That's where he has the right to go after property that was sold off after the date of his loan. Because the assumptions are both like, if Reuven borrowed $1,000 from Shimon, and then Reuven the next week sold property, if that loan was recorded in a note, in a document, then I, the subsequent purchaser, should know about that loan. Therefore, when I bought the property from Reuven, I recognized that I bought it with the reality of an encumbrance. But if it was never recorded in a document, it was just witnessed, then there's no kol. Because there's no kol, I, the purchaser, should have no reason to know about that loan, and therefore the property I bought should not be encumbered by that loan. On the other hand, look at the Rashbam. Man dezabin befarhasya kazabin, kedei sheyik b'tzvalei lezok. On the other hand, when you sell property, you want to make this as public of a display as possible. Why? In order that more buyers try to jump on the sale. V'helchach, Afsidu lukuchos anafshayhu. Shem tchakru yafe hayu shomim ne adam shemachru shemachar mocher zekvar kakabachrayas. But on the other hand, when a person goes in and sells land, everything is done exceptionally publicly. So because it's done publicly, therefore what? Therefore again, the achrayis is upon me, the seller, to know a bit more, even in the absence of a shtar. So both sides, the Gemara is making a distinction over here. The Gemara essentially is saying is like this. Real estate transaction, everyone knows about. Everyone knows about. Therefore, the onus is upon the buyer to be able to know what other outstanding transaction the seller has going on. Masha'inkin loans are often made quietly and secretly. Therefore, in the absence of the shtar, I, the subsequent buyer, should have no way of knowing about the other loan transactions that the seller had going on. Tan Rabban, supposed to say interesting, just interesting halachas in terms of the nature of transactions. So the Gemara goes weiter. Tan Rabban, Ochlo ha'av shana, v'aben shtayim. Let's listen to this case. We're now talking about establishing chazaka. Let's say the father used the property for a year. Then the father died, the son was Yoresh, and the son lived on the property for 2 years. Or, Ha'av Shtayim Va'ben Shana, or the father lived on the property for 2 years, and the son lived on the property for 1 year. So we'll say between them they have a combined 3 years. Or, Ha'av Shana Va'ben Shana, Valokeach Shana. Or about say, the father lived on it for a year, father died, son inherited it, son lived on it for a year, and then the son sold it to someone else who lived on it for a year. The halacha is harizu chazaka. So I'll say the combined 3 years of dwelling amongst all of these people established chazaka. Is that to say, lememra, the lokeach is like kala? Now, I'll say, now what you're saying is that when you purchase property, the act of purchasing a piece of property generates a call. Right? Generates a call. Yet Rav Osai, Avermini, but yet we'll go ahead and we'll raise a kasha on this. What's the kasha? Look at the reverse case. We'll say, let's say Reuven is living on a piece of property. Achala bifnea av shana. So we'll say, let's say the last known owner of this property was, we'll call him the Av, the father. Now Reuven lives on this land in the presence of the father for a year. Bifnea ben shtayim, and he lives in the presence of the son for 2 years. Or, Bifnea av shtayim, he lives in the presence of the father for 2 years. Ubifnea ben shana, in front of the son for 1 year. Or, right, Bifnea ben shana. Or, Bifnea av shana, Ubifnea ben shana, Ubifnea lokeach shana. Or, I will say what happens. Reuven lives on the property in the presence of the father for 1 year, in the presence of the son for 1 year, and then the son sold it to a third party, and what? Reuven lives it on that land for a year in front of the lokeach. What's talacha? Harezu chazaka. I will say Reuven has effectively had a chazaka. He's lived on this land for 3 years. Granted, it was 1 year in front of the father, 1 year in front of the son, 1 year in front of the party to whom the son sold the property, but nevertheless, this is chazaka. Besides, what's going on over here? V'sakadaitcha lokeach isleikala ein lecha macha gidol mizo. Rabbi say, if you say that a lokeach, a purchase has a kol, then Rabbi say, let's play this out. When the son sells the property to a lokeach, when he sells the property to the lokeach, what is he saying? Saying, Reuven, you who live in my land, you are not the correct owner to this land. You're not the rightful owner. What's the raya? What's the proof to that? The proof to that is what? That lemaisa, I've sold it to someone else. See, if you hold that the sale of real estate has a kol, then by definition, when the son sells it to a third party, we'll say that is an objection that he is lodging to the residency of Reuven. That objection should what? Should disrupt the chazaka of Reuven and prevent it from, disrupt the residency of Reuven and prevent him from establishing a chazaka. To which the Gemara says, Amar Rav Papa. Rav Papa says, Ki tanya hi bemocher sados av stam. But it is an interesting case. The case over here says, the Gemara suggests, Rav Papa, is that when the son sells off the land, he's not just selling this parcel, but rather, again, it's a case where he's selling the property, the estate of his father. We call him Mocher Sados of Stam. He's selling the estate of his father. Now look at the Rashbam for just a moment. The Rashbam says, Amar Rav Papa, Li'olam Eben Lecha Delokeach Isleikala. I would say in the normal circumstances, was it that when you sell real estate, a real estate transaction always has a kol. Especially going back to what we just said before, that a real estate transaction, because it's almost always done publicly, always has a kol. And that is true whether it is recorded in a shtar or not. So if that's the case, that a real estate transaction always has a kol, then why is it that when the son sells the property to a third party, why is that not a macha to the residency of Reuven, who's been living on that field for 3 years? Mishum the makar lo haben kol sadosav stam. Because of also the case that we're dealing with over here is where Reuven, the son, sells the property stam. What does that mean? So osan shayu shal aviv v'toin alokeach shegam zeh hasade karnisi b'chal kol kaosav karka osav kulam daminale kol sadosav makar locha chutz mizu avali makar zeh hasade b'fnei atzmo batla cheskaso shal machzik. We'll say, here's what's happening in this case. So we'll say, let's play this out. Reuven has been living on this land year one in the presence of the father, was the last known owner. Father dies, son, quote unquote, is yorish the property. Reuven's still living there year two in the presence of the son. Son then goes ahead and sells the estate property to a third party. And again, Reuven lives there in the presence of the purchaser in year number three as well. Now in Reuven's mind, what has he just done? He established chazaka, right? Because Ilya now lived for 3 years uninterrupted in the presence of these successive owners. Father, son, lokeach. So what happens? So and Reuven says, no one ever objected. To which Rav Osai, and Reuven says, owner, if you would have gone ahead and be the real owner of this land, you should have objected to my residency. Owner says, ultimately, again, I had no obligation to object to your residency, because again, the sale itself is a macho, the sale itself is an objection to your residency on this land. Reuven, on the other hand, claims that Lamaisa, no, I still own the land, because although you were sold the property of the deceased father by the Yoresh son, that sale did not include that piece of land that I am currently occupying. So essentially our papa says that Lamaisa, the case of here is Bamocher Sadosav Stam, and essentially we have ambiguity as to whether or not the piece of property that Reuven was living on was included in this sale as well. So we finished the sale here. So bottom line, what do we have? So bottom line, what we have over here is we emerge with a couple of very important halachas. Number one, that although up until this time we assumed that chazaka always meant uninterrupted residency of one person for 3 years, we now learn that halacha lemaisa, so multiple residencies could combine to form one string of chazaka. So that was the case that we began with, of shalosh lukuchos mitstarfin, that if you have three people who live on the land successively, each for a year, their 1 year residencies could go ahead and combine to form a string of chazaka. We accept Rav's qualification that that's only with the shtar. Why? Because the shtar creates the kol. That's halacha number one. Halacha number two, says the Gemara paints for us a very important distinction between halva, between loans, and between real estate transactions. Loans were often only done how? Quietly and secretly. Therefore, there is no reason to assume that a loan has a kol. The only time that we assume that a loan has a kol is when it is recorded in a shtar. But if it's not recorded in a shtar, then it doesn't have a kol. And Rabbi say the lack of a kol ultimately, again, could go ahead and have ramifications upon people who purchase properties from a borrower after the date of the loan. Because as the halacha is telling us, if I purchase property from a borrower, from a debtor, after the date of his loan, and that loan was not recorded in a shtar, so again, I will say, I may have recourse against any future creditors that would come to seize property from me, because I could say that what? I had absolutely no way of knowing about the existence of the loan. That is different than real estate transactions. Real estate transactions, I will say, even if they're not recorded in a shtar, there's an automatic assumption that what? That they have a kol. Why do they have a kol? Because real estate transactions were always done publicly in order to generate the greatest amount of interest. Therefore, even if the transaction is not recorded in the shtar, any subsequent purchaser should know about the transaction, because every transaction has a kol. Good. Says the Mishnah. Now we go weiter. Ha'omin v'ashutfin v'arisin. Now we're going to get into a very interesting discussion. Amen. Ha'umnin va'ashutvin. So we'll say umnin are craftsmen, shutvin are partners, arisin sharecroppers, apotropin. It was an apotropis is like an executor for an estate. Eilem chazaka. None of them have chazaka, we'll say, on property that they are involved in. Now, I just want to point out, the Rashbam points out over here that umnin, see the other people, shutfin, arisin, apotropin, are all relationships with karka, with real property. So umnin is the one exception. It's umnin, a craftsman, usually is someone who deals with metaltlin, with movable property. Leaving umnin out first, we'll come back to umnin in just a moment. If you look at shutfin, arisin, apotropin on both sides, those are all people who have rishus to be involved in real property. So therefore, I both say, for example, if a shutaf comes along and says, you know, I've been working this property for the last 3 years, I am now the owner, he doesn't have the right to make that claim, why, I both say, because he has the reshus of the other shutaf to be there. Similarly, if an apotropist has been managing property, and he says, oh, you see, I've been managing this property for 3 years, that's demonstrative of my ownership, that's also not a valid claim, why? Because he has rishus to be there. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that this idea of chazaka, 3 years of use, 3 years of use, 3 years of use of property, giving you the ability to claim ownership, is only a din where you didn't have a legal right to be there to begin with. But if you had a legal right to be there to begin with, then your usage for the last 3 years does not in any way paint a picture of ownership. What about the case of Oman? So this is actually quite interesting. Take a look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, so Omnin, Ba'alei umnus, shemolichin lahem bebatim latakin kelim, kigon savoyin, o kovsin, o chayotin, o sarkei begodim, shetron lakoch ebiodis. We'll say, an Oman is someone who has taken an object of movable property, and he's taken it to his home to fix it in some way. So if he has that object for 3 years, he cannot claim ownership. Eilam chazaka. The Rashbam says, V'lo b'cheskas shalosh shana mairi, v'stam uman lo shayach ele b'metaltlin. So as we just said before, by an uman, this is not talking about a chazaka of 3 years, because umnin, craftsmen, are usually not dealing with real property, they're dealing with movable property. V'cheskas shalosh shana namra ele b'mekarkoi. El makakoi avam mataltali nishu muhsak bishakhaver afidu shaachas shalrab shioti mitachas yado afa pi shiesh tachaver idum shayo shalom neeman za muhsak lomar lakoach ubiadi tistam lokeach mataltan mechaver below idum hukona below star chutz midvaran suyin lahashu lahaskas. So listen to this. It's actually really quite interesting. Under normal circumstances, Rabbi Osai, if I have a movable object in my rishus and I claim that it is mine, I am believed. Why am I believed? So the truth is, this is the possession is 9/10 of the law idea. If I have an object in my possession, I am the presumed owner of that object, right? And I both say, in order for someone else to claim that they are the owner, then it's going to fall into the category of what? Hamotzi mechaver alav arayo. So, right? Meaning, if you have a snowblower and you claim it's yours and I claim, no, it's mine, so the burden of proof is going to be upon me to prove that it's my snowblower in your rishos. At the end of the day, it's yours. You have it in your possession. So, what's this? The Gemara is suggesting over here, that only applies to, meaning, let's play this out. If Reuben is a snowblower repairman, and what happens? I claim I gave him the snowblower to fix, and he claims that he has it, it's his, so we'll say he can't claim chazak in that situation. He's a uman. And because, again, the probability is that this is a snowblower I gave him to fix, he does not have the right to claim that he is owner. Now, we're going to have to clarify exactly what this means, but that's the Gemara suggests. In other words, the common denominator of both in all of these cases are, these are all people who, from a legal perspective, have... There's a logic why the object is in their possession, but the fact that the object is in their possession does not in any way paint a picture of ownership. There's another feasible reason, ultimately, again, why this is in their possession. So it says the Gemara, back to the Mishnah. So lo liish chazaka. Lo liish chazaka b'nechse ishto. Lo liish chazaka b'nechse baila. Well, say similarly again, a man cannot claim a chazaka on his wife's property. This is nechse melog. This is property that she brought into the marriage. So he has no right to claim ownership of property that she brought into the marriage. Because again, he has rights of usage, and his rights of usage in no way paint a picture of ownership. Similarly, if she uses his property over over the course of the marriage, her usage also doesn't paint a picture of ownership. So Sina will say, if a father uses property of his son, or if a son uses property of his father, again, these are people who would have rights of usage or opportunities for usage, but that usage in no way paints a picture of ownership. So you will say, what the Mishnah is suggesting over here is, the only time that your usage paints a picture of ownership is when, technically speaking, if you weren't the owner would contest to your usage. In all of these cases, Rabbo say, I could be using property, and the real owner wouldn't contest for one simple reason. Either he doesn't mind or she doesn't mind that I'm there, or I'm performing a service which allows me to be there. Therefore, because of that, my uncontested usage of the property in no way paints a picture of ownership. So which the Gemara says, b'medra amurim b'machzik, when is this true? And again, we're going to define all of this in the Gemara. So when is this true? Right? When do we say that all of these chazakas aren't real chazakas? B'machzik. So we'll say this is when somebody's trying to establish a chazaka. Aval b'nosein matana. They're both saying the case of where one goes in and gives a matana. Or va'achin shachalku. Or brothers go ahead and divide up an estate. Or b'machzik b'nichse hager. Or one goes ahead and what? Search ownership over the property of a ger. And we'll say the case of Nichse Ager is talking about a convert who died and has no surviving relatives. No surviving relatives. So we'll say in that case, again, we're going to see a ger who has no surviving relatives. Essentially, his property becomes hefker. So we'll say in all of these cases, the na'al gadar uparas. And we'll say that means if somebody closes the door, right, gadar, put up a fence, Paratz makes a breach in the fence, kol shu, any amount, harezu chazaka. And Abbas saying, this gets a little bit confusing. We are going to see that the word chazaka is used two different ways in two different contexts. So we'll say, up until now, what we've been assuming is that chazaka means what? Chazaka means living on property uninterrupted for 3 years. That's chazaka. We also have, there's another use of the word chazaka as a form of kinyan. Chazaka also means the performance of a particular kinyan called chazaka. What's the definition of the kinyan called chazaka? Any proprietary act. So what's an example of a proprietary act that's a kinyan? If you go ahead and you close the door, right, closing a door to a property, that's going to be called the kinyan. Or gods are putting up a fence around the property, that's called the kinyan. Or paras, or breaching a fence that is already there, those are all forms of proprietary acts, and in all of those cases, those will be demonstrative of ownership in ways in which we will outline. Amud Beis will say, says the Gemara, Abu Ad Shmuel Balevi Tanu Shutav Ein Lo Chazaka B'Kol Shekin Uman. So we'll say, Abu Ad Shmuel, the father of Shmuel and Levi, in their discussion over here, they both quoted in their version, it says, Shutav, a partner, has no chazaka, and all the more so an uman. So we'll say a shutaf is a partner in the land. He has no chazaka. Because we'll say, remember again, why does a shutaf have no ability to establish chazaka? Because remember, he has every right to be there. A shutaf has the right to be present. So because he has the right, the legal right to be there, therefore his occupation of the land in no way is demonstrative of ownership. The chol shekein uman. And all the more so, an uman doesn't have the ability to go ahead and establish a chazaka. On the other hand, Shmuel learned, uman ein lo chazaka, that a uman does not have the ability to establish a chazaka, the craftsman, because Rabbi say he has the legal right to go ahead and use the object. Aval shutaf yesh lo chazaka. But a shutaf, Rabbi say, does have the ability to establish chazaka, Three years of uninterrupted use. Now let's analyze this. Shmuel goes according to his reasoning. How so? Damar Shmuel hashutfin machzikin ze'alze. So we'll say Shmuel holds that shutfin have the ability to establish chazaka one against the other. Now look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Machzikin ze'alze. Ema echad machzik bechalka u bechelek chaveiro gimel shona hadia chazaka. Both says, you're going to see, if I'm a shutaf with Reuven in a field, and I live on my part and Reuven's part for 3 years, I have the ability to go and establish a chazaka on Reuven's property as well. V'na'asim, well, we'll discuss the scope of this in just a moment. V'na'asim, umi'idin ze'alze. And both says, we have the ability to testify one for the other as well. Look at the Rashbam. Umi'idin ze'alze. Al chelko shel ze la'amida b'yado. So what says, you're going to see Shutum have the ability, according to Shmuel, to testify on behalf of the other. Even though I might have said Shutvim should be precluded from testifying on behalf of one another. Why? Because perhaps, again, it's like a nogea be'ilus. Perhaps, again, they're, quote-unquote, related. Their interests are related to one another. Therefore, they should not be permitted to testify on behalf of one another. Shmuel says they can. V'na'asim shomrei sachar ze lazen. I will say, interestingly enough, they are considered to be a shomer sachar, one for the other, a paid custodian for the other. Now, what does this mean? Take a look at the Rashbam. V'na'asim shomrei sachar ze lazen. She'im let's say partnership property was stolen from the house of one of the partners. So partnership property stolen from the house of one of the proper of one of the partners. Chayov l'shalim kishomer sachar. This is very interesting. Reuven and Shimon are partners, and let's say again partnership property, the plow. Was stolen from Reuven's. Were stolen from Reuven's shed. What is Reuven's responsibility vis-a-vis the partnership, right? Vis-a-vis Shimon. So the halacha says Shmuel is what, that Reuven is like a shomer sachar, and therefore again he's chayiv to pay like a shomer sachar would be chayiv to pay as well. Why would Reuven be called a shomer sachar? Vis-a-vis the partnership, he's not getting paid to be a shomer. So Rashbam says over here, he says, "Vizel scharo shegam chaveiro yishmar akol kashir zman mashem misham zasher." We'll say he's called a shomer sachar. What's the sachar? How is he a paid custodian? Because we'll say whatever Reuven does, Shimon will do as well. So because Reuven gets the benefit that when he's unable to guard partnership property, Shimon will do so. That's the schar. That's ultimately the wage, so to speak. That is the wage for the Shemirah. So therefore, Shmuel says all about these things. So therefore, what do you see from here? So we have a little bit of machlokis over here. Not a machlokis, but different versions. Savua the Shmuel, in his version, says, Shotov doesn't have a chazaka, and all the more so an Uman. Shmuel, on the other hand, says, Uman doesn't have a chazaka, but a Shotov does have a chazaka. And this goes in accordance with Shmuel's reasoning, because Shmuel says that one Shotov has the ability to establish a chazaka vis-a-vis the other. Shmuel says, Shotov machzik in zelazeh, they testify on behalf of another, and ultimately, again, they're shomer sachar. And I was saying, what does this show? This shows that Shmuel holds that as much as Shutfim are joined, and that they jointly own property, they still operate as independent interests. So they have a joint common interest, i.e. property, but they still function as separate interests. That's why they could create a chazaka one against the other. That's why they could testify one on behalf of the other. That's why they are a shomer sachar one for the other. It's an interesting way of viewing partnerships. They have a joint property interest, but yet they have separate interests otherwise. So the Gemara says, Rami le Rabbi Abba le Rabbi Yehuda b'ma'arta de'bei Rav Zakai. But this is interesting. So Rabbi Abba posed the question to Rabbi Yehuda while they were standing at the kever of Rav Zakai. All right. So they're talking Torah by the kever. Masi asar the Dalai Lamas. Right? Of the kever of Rav Zakai. Mi amar Shmuel shutaf yesh lo chazaka. Did Shmuel really say that one shutaf could go ahead and establish a chazaka vis-a-vis the other? V'amar Shmuel, but yet Shmuel said, Shutaf kiyori b'shus dami. Shmuel said, Rabbi say that a shutaf is like someone who comes onto property with permission. Then Rabbi say, now if you go ahead and you come onto property with permission, then what? Like, what do we see from that based on the Mishnah? Right? Then you have no ability to go and establish a chazaka. Rabbi say, it's the same way. If I go and I hire Reuven to be my sharecropper. Reuven, you're my sharecropper for the next 5 years. And after 3 years, Reuven says, you know what? I hereby establish my chazaka. I've been here for 3 years and you never objected. What do I say to Reuven? Shkoyach yitipish. That's being nice. Right? Of course you don't have a chazaka. Right? Why? Because I invited you here. Right? You're my sharecropper. I give you the right to be here. Of course you can't go ahead and claim chazaka. You're here because I gave you permission to be here. So Shmuel said that a shutaf, partners operate on the same field. They're shutfim. They both have a license to be there. Therefore, one shutaf cannot claim chazaka against the other. Lav lememra, the shutaf ain't lo chazaka. We'll say, is that not to be understood? I mean, what does it mean when Shmuel says that a shutaf is kiyoreid birishus? Shmuel makes a statement that a shutaf, a partner, is like one who has permission to be on the field. What does that mean? Is Shmuel not saying that because he has permission, therefore what? one shutaf cannot claim chazaka on the partnership property against the other. So you see, Rabbi say that what? That Shmuel says that a shutaf doesn't have the ability to make a chazaka. That contradicts what Shmuel said before. Because Rabbi say, just before, what did Shmuel say? Hashutfin machzikin ze al ze. Rabbi say, this is a very important discussion. Because what this essentially is saying is the following. You have two partners in a field. One partner goes ahead and occupies the field for 3 years, and then after 3 years claims that he has a chazaka. You, my partner, you never said anything to me. Does that establish chazaka or not? So we assume that Shmuel was saying no. Well, excuse me, we assume before that Shmuel said, now we assume Shmuel said before, Hashutfin machzikin ze al ze, that one partner can create a chazaka against the other. Yet what? Now Shmuel seems to be saying that one shutaf cannot create a chazaka against the other. So which one is it? Lo kashya. Oh, Gemara says not a contradiction. Ha dinachas lekula, ha dinachas lepalga. Both say it depends. It depends. So it depends if the partner is on part of the field or if the partner is on the whole field. They both say, now which way do we view this? Amrile lahai gisa, v'amrile lahai gisa. So both say, look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Amrile lahai gisa. It's actually look at Dinachis Lapalga. It's the first of the wide lines. Dinachis Lapalga, Bechila Kamufkar Hechzik, Va'amrachalkenu, Vigia Zalachalki, Vechsakti Bo Shalashanim, Vidach Tayin, Tayin Adain Lochilaknu, Elakach Hisnisu Beninu, Shetoka Osechil Gusha. So let's watch this. Reuben and Shimon jointly own a piece of property, but they did not yet divide up the property. So what happens? Reuven now has been living on or been using the whole field himself exclusively for the last 3 years. So watch this. So it says the Gemara, look at the Rashbam, really the Hagisa. Yesh matartzim be'inyon ze, had amr Shmuel shutaf yesh lo chazaka. When do we say that Shmuel says that a shutaf has chazaka? The nachis lekula, the minok shutfim lital b'shutfis peros, kol shana b'shana. So we'll say, so there are two different versions of this. In the first version, what we say is the following. That the case of where Shmuel says that shutfim du have a chazaka is when one partner lived on, or when I say lived on, used the whole field for 3 years. Since it is normal in partnerships for what? To divide up the land, or at least to divide up the produce immediately. If one partner used all of the produce, got all the produce for 3 years consecutively, that indicates that what? That indicates what? That's a chazaka. On the other hand, if the partner only got 50% of the produce for 3 years, then what? That's not a chazaka. Others say that no, that often the minog in partnerships was what? That one partner was to tell, listen, you get the field for the first 3 years, I'll get the field for the second 3 years. We'll say in that version, then what? Then exclusive use of the full property would what? Would not establish chazaka. So what the Gemara is trying to suggest over here is, really, it depends on the nature of the partnership setup, of the deal, right? So there could be cases where ultimately exclusive use of the property for a sustained amount of time might establish chazaka ultimately again for one partner over the other, and there will be times when it won't. But the point I will say for our purposes, what we emerge with is still Shmuel l'shitaso, and Shmuel says that depending on the circumstances, one partner can establish a chazaka against another by exclusive use of the property for some amount of time. I'm sorry?
There's no shtar here?
Correct. Remember again, anytime there's a shtar, it spells things out. These are the absence of a shtar. So says the Gemara, I mean, there might be a shtar that says they own the property jointly. There might be that, but in terms of how this arrangement is, this is not being committed to writing. So Bosa says the Gemara, Rabina Amar, Rabina says, no, I'll tell you what it means. Haba ha dinachas lekula. Bosa, both cases are talking about where one of the partners is using the property in totality. Look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Actually, not yet. I'm sorry. Yes, look at the Rashbam. Ravina Amar Hava Hadinachas Lekula. Actually, no, not yet. Sorry, back to the Gemara. So Ravina says, Hava Hadinachas Lekula. We're talking about a case where one partner used the entire property for a full 3 years. Below Kasha, Had Ispadin Chaluka, Had Lespadin Chaluka. And Abba says, it's not a contradiction. Why? One case is talking about Rabbi Sai, where the property is large enough to be split amongst two partners, and one is where the property is not large enough to be split amongst two parents. Also, remember, we learned this back in Bab Metzia. Take a look at Rashbam. Ravina Amar Hava Hadinachas Lakula Hadir Islay Babin Chaluka. Arba Amosav Abbasal. Also, remember, again, we learned this in Bab Metzia. The smallest amount of property for which one partner could force the other to dissolve the partnership interest is how much? 8 amos. In other words, each partner, the most minimum shear of a proper field is Dalit amos. So Ravina says the following. Listen to this. Ravina says it depends on the size of the field. If the field was 8 amos, which means that there was enough property for both of them, and one of the partners occupies all 8 amos for 3 years, then what's Rabbi Osai? That is indicative that the other partner ceded and yielded his partnership interest to the, we'll call him the occupying partner. Because otherwise he should not have allowed as a partner to live there for a full three years uninterrupted. But, Bosai, watch this. Let's say the field was less than 8 amos. So therefore what? There's not enough property to order a division. And one of the partners lived there for 3 years uninterrupted, then it's possible that what? That because the land is not big enough to order a division, the agreement they reached was what? You use it for 3 years, and I'll use it for 3 years. And therefore, Rabbi Osai, one partner's exclusive use of the property for a sustained amount of time for 3 years is not indicative of ownership. Rabbi Osai, so you hear this? And by the way, this is in fact halach lemaisa. Ravina's position is accepted in the Shulchan Aruch. So Rabbi Osai, you understand this distinction? You have Reuben and Shimon, jointly owned property. Reuven lives there for 3 years uninterrupted. What happens after those 3 years? So Shimon says, okay, I'd like my field back. Reuven says, what are you talking about? You sold it to me. V'haraya, the proof that you sold me your partnership interest is what Rabbi Osai. I've been living here for 3 years uninterrupted. You never made a machal. To which Shimon says, of course I never made a machal. We're partners. So we'll say, what's the halacha? To which Ravina says, it depends on the nature of the land. If the land is large enough, that there's enough space, there's enough land for both of them, were they to split the partnership assets. In other words, dalet amos for each, then what Rabbi Osai? Then there's no way that Shimon would have allowed Reuven to live on his portion for 3 years, uninterrupted, unless, of course, what? He sold him his partnership interest. Therefore, if Reuven lives there 3 years, when I say live there, I mean use it. 3 years uninterrupted, that's a raya that Shimon ceded his partnership interest to Reuven. If, however, the partnership land is too small to order a division of land, therefore it's quite feasible that what? That the way they structured their ownership was how? Reuven, you use it for a couple of years, and then I, Shimon, will use it for a couple of years. And therefore, again, if Reuven's been living there 3 years, that is not indicative of Chazaka. That's just ultimately indicative of the way they structure their partnership agreement. Amazing. Well, so let's just finish off. Gufa, Amar Shmuel. So Shmuel said, Shutuf ki yorid birishus dami. That a Shutuf, Rabbi Osai, a partner, is like someone who comes into the field with rishus. So my Kamashwan, what is this coming to teach us? Shutfis ain lo chazaka. So we'll say, if Shmuel's coming to teach us that a shutaf, that a partner, doesn't have chazaka like we said before, then lema shutaf ain lo chazaka. Why don't you just say that? Or why do you have to use this lashon that a shutaf, a partner, is someone who enters the field with rishus? Why don't instead you just say that what? That a shutaf doesn't have chazaka? It must be the Gemara is coming to teach me something different. So Amrav Nachman, Amrav Ravua Lomar, Shonotel b'shevach hamagia l'kseifayim b'sada, She'ina asuya lito, kisada asuya lito. Oh, Rabbi Osai is coming to teach another important halacha. And with this we'll end off. It's coming to teach Rabbi Osai the following halacha. Take a look at the Rashbam. Lomar shenotel kidin aris. Rabbi Osai comes to teach us that if a partner went ahead and planted the field, right? So Rabbi Osai, as we're going to get into, we'll get into this more in the subsequent dapim. You know, different fields were suited for different things. Some fields were suited for trees, other fields were suited for vegetables, and other fields were suited for grain. So Rabbi Osai, as we're going to see the following. Let's say you have a partnership situation where one of the partners, well, let's look at the Rashbam. He says, Lomar shenotel, the partner takes his portion, kedin ares shiori birishus, afilu b'shevach hamagia l'kseifayim. Gemar piri, I'm just going to read a little bit, then I'll explain. Pigon, kama liktzor, v'anavim liktzor, notel kol achatzi, kedin ares se'air, Vafilu sada she'ina asui lita elizria vinata hunotel kol dino ki ilu asui lita ki dinayor bishos. Supposed to listen to this. If one of the partners inappropriately planted the field, what does it mean inappropriately planted the field? Let's say in Avosa at the end of the day, this was a field that wasn't supposed to have trees, and he put trees in there. So I might have thought that because it's an illegal usage of the field, that when I say, I'm using the wrong words, illegal is the wrong word, inappropriate usage of the field. Perhaps, again, we'll call him the planting partner. I should say, Yado ala tachtona, he should get the short end of the straw because he misused the field. Kamash Molon, that because he has a right to be there, even if at the end of the day he didn't plant the field with what was appropriate to be planted, he still shares in the field in accordance with his portion. So he still gets like a sharecrop, whatever the portion is, plus with the prop, what the Gemara calls the Shabach HaMageh L'Ksefayim. That refers to whatever mature crop there is at the time that he's partnership interest ends, he still gets the opportunity to share in that standing crop as well. Let me just go back to the Rashbam. The Rashbam says the following. He says, Kidin Aris, Shayor, I'm sorry, so he says, Gnootel, who called Dino Kilo, Asay Lito, Kidin Ayorid Birishos. Shabbos says he has the ability to share in the crop of that field, just like one who was there permissibly. Dino Yorid Shlo Birishos, Shamin Lobby Adal Tachtona, Dimashem, Shabbos says, we're going to see later on, we'll see these cases. If someone comes into a field and illegally plants. I was going to say, somebody walks into my field and illegally plants. We discussed this case in Bab Metzia as well. So the halacha is, Yado ala tachtona. Yado ala tachtona means, he gets paid, but he gets the paid of lower of two amounts, either the appreciation of the field or his expenses. His expenses. But I will say, when someone is a partner in the field, even if he quote unquote acts inappropriately, when I say act inappropriately means, he plants the wrong stuff in the field, he still shares. He doesn't get. We don't say yada ala taktona. We don't say he's put at a disadvantage. Rather, we say yada ala yona. So we'll say bottom line is, if I'm a partner in a field, even if I mess up and I plant the wrong stuff, I am not put at a disadvantage. Rather, I still share in that field at least as if I was a sharecropper. All right, Debo, so we'll stop. We'll pick up at the two dots in Meretz Hashem tomorrow. Thank you.